But this is what they do. And we have history to prove it. I mean, Catherine Casey was part of the Rees Committee, went to the International Endowment, or the for the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and discovered from the earliest meetings that they had in their meeting minutes that that's exactly what they were doing, trying to steer America into a perpetual state of war to create a massive shift as quickly as possible. And war was the most efficient means because you can get people to act irrationally in a state of crisis and perpetual state of national emergency. It doesn't have to make sense. We just have to do it. So you know, like James Corbett asks, but never forget what exactly? That is the question. Are you tired of forgetting what it is you're supposed to remember, not to forget about 9/11? Never fear. In this week's edition of the Corbett Report, subscriber James will teach you the lessons that the 9/11 government terrorists and their corporate media lackeys want to take away from that tragic day, want you to take away from that tragic day. So if you're not a member, become a member. And speaking of that, it's important that you help support this network. Obviously, a number of folks have echoed the sentiment that, I mean, when I called into the National Intel Report yesterday, I said that there are, I can't count the number of things that I've learned from this network listening to certain folks. I mean, I learned about folks like Jack Otto and Joan Viana, and what I meant to say, and, you know, Ralph Winterode and so many other folks, and so much information that set me off in directions that were helpful in at least sort of making sense of what was going on, so that when we see invasions in Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, Syria, and so many other places that have gone on for decades, Iran, you know, Somalia, Sudan, and so many other places that don't make sense. Well, you know, they might attack us for, they might attack us with what? With spears and rocks? Come on. From caves? I mean, we've been fed this steady diet of nonsense, complete BS for so long. You know, who recruited Osama bin Laden? Robin Wright wrote about it in 1998. Speaking of 1998, I asked this question back in on April 10 of this year, April 10, 2018. I asked in an interview back in May of 1998, guess who made this statement? And when I posed the question, there were some interesting answers: Gaddafi, Saddam Hussein, et cetera, et cetera. But you can, you know, with a quick web search, you'll easily discover by whom it was made. But before searching, listen to the statement. I'll read it again in its entirety. See if you can identify who made this statement in an interview back in May of 1998. This person said, "We know at least one reason behind the symbolic participation of the Western forces, and that is to support the Jewish and Zionist plans for expansion of what is called the Great Israel. Surely their presence is not out of concern over their interests in the region. Their presence has no meaning save one, and that is to offer support to the Jews in Palestine who are in need of their Christian brothers to achieve full control over the Arab Peninsula, which they intend to make an important part of the so-called Greater Israel." The leaders in America and in other countries as well have fallen victim to Jewish Zionist blackmail. They have mobilized their people against Islam and against Muslims. Do you hear Pike's letter at all in there? Political Zionism collided against political Islam. Because it's not, well, the feigned controversy, the contrived controversy is political Zionism and political Islam. It's actually drawing real people into the conflict, Zionizing Christians, so to speak, and Wahhabizing Muslims and others, you know, as Geert Koolman so brilliantly put it, you know, the Wahhabizing of the West and others. Anyway, beyond the Fertile Crescent, so to speak. So this person said, these are portrayed in such a manner as to drive people to rally against them. The truth is that the whole Muslim world is the victim of international terrorism. Well, the whole, yeah, that's pretty much true, you know, with the exception of the Wahhabi, Salafi, Diobandi ideologues. They're ideologues. They're not, they would call themselves Muslims and everyone else is an infidel to them, but that's like, you know, a Ku Klux Klan member saying, I'm a Christian and no one else is, you know, even, you know, these Southern Baptists who don't subscribe to my views, they're not Christians. Same thing. So these are portrayed in such a manner as to drive people to rally against them. The truth is that the whole Muslim world is the victim of international terrorism engineered by America and at the United Nations. Remember, this is what, that's essentially a sentiment that Muammar Gaddafi echoed at the United Nations, his UN General Assembly speech, September 23rd, 2009, I want to say. Supposed to be 10 to 15 minutes, lasted over 100. Probably the speech that got him killed. We are a nation, this person said, whose sacred symbols have been looted and whose wealth and resources have been plundered. I say to you, the American people, that is, that they have put themselves at the mercy of a disloyal government. And this is most evident in Clinton's administration. We believe that this administration represents Israel inside America. That sounds like what Chris Bolin has been saying for over a decade. Take the sensitive ministries such as the Ministry of Exterior and the Ministry of Defense and the CIA. You will find that Jews have the upper hand in them. They make use. I don't like the conflating of Jews and Zionists. That's one issue that I take. Anyway, continuing, I think that's intentional to foment controversy and conflict, to balkanize folks. They make use of America to further their plans for the world, especially the Islamic world. American presence in the Gulf provides support to the Jews and protects their rear. And while millions of Americans are homeless and destitute and live in abject poverty, their government is busy occupying our land and building new settlements and helping Israel build new settlements. Isn't it interesting, as a parenthetical aside, that you know, Pike's letter to Mazzini back on August 15, 1871, outlining three world wars, a third to be fomented by colliding political Zionism against political Islam, calls into play forces that essentially didn't really exist at that point. And then after World War II, we have the creation of British Zionist Israel, so-called, the counterfeit. And just prior to World War II, you have the creation of Saudi Arabia, the headwaters of Wahhabism, Salafism, Diobandism, this radical ideology. Again, you go to Salafi movement on Wikipedia and you click on the section titled Views on Extremism, and it says right in that short section, Salafism is sponsored globally by Saudi Arabia, and this ideology is used to justify the violent acts of jihadi Salafi groups that include Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Boko Haram, and the Al-Shabaab. If you want to stop it, why is this continuing? Why is Saudi Arabia one of our dearest allies? Do you understand how none of this makes sense until you really start making an honest assessment of what's really going on? Again, this network was instrumental in that for me. Continuing with the quote, this person further said, the American government is leading the country towards hell, and the world, I would add, as a proxy, by the way. We say to the Americans as people and to American mothers, if they cherish their lives and if they cherish their sons, they must elect an American patriot government that caters to their interests and not the interests of the Jews. If the present injustice continues with the wave of national consciousness, it will inevitably move the battle to American soil, just as Ramzi Youssef and others have done. This is my message to the American people. I urge them to find a serious administration that acts in their interest and does not attack people and violate their honor and pilfer their wealth. So who made that statement back in May of 1998? You can find it in a quick interwebs search. Nonetheless, I will mention who it was at the end of the hour today. So that's an interesting statement, especially coming from this person. You know, we've been led to believe certain things, and yet this person makes a statement like this. Kind of makes sense. I wouldn't use the terms Jew and Zionist synonymously by any means. I think we need to stop conflating terms. I think the term Jew has been used as a weapon to foment intrigue, controversy, deception, and conflict, turmoil, balkanizing people. And we should just stop doing that. You know, let's stop doing that. So, you know, just briefly on that note, yesterday, National Intel Report, I mentioned some things, and I had more that I would have said. You know, Jack Otto gave an extensive history of a certain people group in his last public talk, that Forbidden Knowledge talk you can still find on YouTube. And I point folks to that talk as often as I can. Arthur Kessler, you know, John talked about Jack Otto, you know, and he did a broadcast on this network for a period of time. He wrote World War III, a book that, you know, I asked John specifically yesterday when I called in if it's still available. And apparently it is, which is fantastic. And everyone who has ever listened to this network, any broadcast on it, should call and order a copy of World War III, in my humble opinion. It is one of those incredibly exhaustive works. It's probably a lifetime of research. It's, I think, hundreds of cross-references to other materials. And I don't have my copy in front of me, but as I recall, it's, you know, well over 100 different cross-references to other materials. I think at least probably 200, if I had to guess. I think it's more, if memory serves. Anyway, and those are all essential reading. Arthur Kessler wrote The 13th Tribe, and as Jeff Rentz pointed out, at the height of the controversy in 1983, the lifeless bodies of Arthur Kessler and his wife were found in their London home, killed by Mossad shortly after releasing his book. Jim Traficant, as I mentioned yesterday on the National Intel Report, didn't have a heart attack or a seizure before he was basically asphyxiated by his, capsized tractor. On a, you know, as John pointed out, you know, he's headed to the barn, probably on a flat ground on a farm, and his tractor capsizes. I think that's the operative term. And people try to say, oh, well, you know, I had a heart attack, a seizure, you know, and no. Nope. So that's strange. You know, I mentioned Chris Bolin's talk a couple of times this week already. I have intended to play a clip from it. And again, you know, so John said, I think John mentioned it was in Seguin. It was the entirety of the National Intel Report broadcast on Monday. But it's that talk that Adam Green published over at No More News, KNOW, No More News, Christopher Bolin explains who really did 9/11, and he's done a number of these over the years, but it always just gets better and more refined and more fluent, I would say. So that's a must watch. And then, you know, the protocols, like I said, as Henry Mackow observed, I always want to say Mackow, but, you know, I'll do it Henry's way. It's his name. As Henry Mackow observed, Nobel Prize winner Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote that the book exhibits the mind of genius. That's interesting. And so you look at the Zionist protocols, as I would call them. You just go through them sometime. If you haven't read them lately, read them. And just sort of reflect. Just look at, even though there was a nefarious control of the media already in the early days, there was still, and you know, it was the same old dialectical conflict model, colliding A and C together to get to B. If you want to get from A to Z, how do you do it by degrees in devilish fashion? You collide A and C together, you just start get people talking about it, and then you end up at B. And then you collide B and D together, you end up at C, and so on, until you're somewhere around Y, pretty darn close to Z, you know? So, an example of that concept would be the controversy of the, you know, the I Love Lucy episodes, where they're not sleeping in the same bed, but you have this depiction of something that you otherwise wouldn't concern yourself with. And the baby, you know, we can't show baby on the air. You're introducing this controversy, and people say, well, yeah, but, you know, it was conservative back then. Yes, but it was the introduction of the controversy to move the discussion along the continuum, to get to entire debauchery, complete debauchery. And who can argue that's not what we've been seeing over the last several decades, over the last century or so? Anyway, that, you know, reminds me of all of the protocols. The mob will elect the president or give you a figure to vote for. Doesn't that sound like the last election? Hillary Clinton steals the Democratic so-called nomination in mafioso fashion. Donald Trump, I mean, come on. If there was ever a mafia, a bumbling sort of mafia figure at that, but, you know, if there ever was one, I would say he'd be it. Anyway, hopefully all of that makes sense. You know, I mentioned again that the IRS is sort of the black hand of the money cabal. Truott, in his 30 Facts About America, point number one, fact number one, the 30 little-known facts about America. Fact number one is the IRS is not a U.S. government agency. It is an agency of the IMF. Several sources. Number one cited, Diversified Metal Products versus IRS et al., CV93-405. E-EJE. And remember what Carol Quigley wrote in what he told us in Tragedy and Hope, History of the World in Our Time? The apex of that cabal is the BIS, the Bank for International Settlements. A way to control the economies, the countries, and the people everywhere around the world. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Lenders. Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com, or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigRelief migraine formula. MigRelief is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigRelief for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life, or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354, or visit MIG911.com.
Welcome back. It's pretty clear when you really start to step back and examine what's going on that we are, as John Adams pointed out, or as he feared in 1765, being led or driven or led blindfolded to irretrievable destruction. It is, you know, it's interesting to me that they didn't really name names. They used terms like cunning and ambitious, unprincipled men. We should be on the lookout for the earmarks of character, so to speak. Not necessarily naming people or even people groups, because or ideological bents, because that is problematic. These people are masters of intrigue and deception. Remember, you know, they have slogans like waging war by deception. Which is no surprise. Sun Tzu told us all war is based on deception. They are, you know, there is a particular contingent of them, I think mentioned by Jesus himself in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, but I don't think the conspiracy ends there by any means. But they're all wolves masquerading in sheep's clothing. I think those people are useful tools to a large extent. Because again, you read Pike's letter, you read things, documents like the Balfour Declaration. Who's reporting to whom? So they're wolves masquerading in sheep's clothing. Again, ruthless and cunning in the fashion of William Bill the Butcher Cutting, Daniel Day-Lewis's character from Gangs in New York. They tell us their plan through documents like Pike's letter to Mazzini, the Communist Manifesto, you know, the Dusseldorf rules, the protocols, and so on. The weakening and crippling of the mind, body, and spirit and constitution of the everyman, so to speak. And that, to me, is what the protocols, the Communist Manifesto, etc., the Communist rules, those two documents in particular, the Dusseldorf rules and the protocols represent. The crippling of the mind, body, spirit, and constitution of the everyman. And so you look at, as one friend put it, many years ago, the state of perpetual war, sending this feigned patriotism, and I would say there is a propaganda driven conscription of folks. You know, it's better than snatching someone off the street who doesn't want to go. It's better for their cause to propagandize us from womb to grave on this feigned patriotism, and now it's been sanctioned, and we're paying for it through the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, essentially. Because remember that PBS article in 2015, the military is paying the NFL millions of dollars to have you feign patriotism. So it's just, you know, it's easier. So doing that, this perpetual state of war, when you think about it for a moment, is the genocide of the warrior class. You're destroying the warrior class. You're sending them off constantly to either die or be irreparably damaged, particularly emotionally, mentally, you know, psychologically, crippling the mind. In many cases, the body, definitely the spirit. But, you know, Walter Reed Hospital and DARPA want to put you back together. The $6 million man, we have the technology. And that's what they're doing. The American spirit is being eroded and eviscerated by these people. And they're cowards. Again, they won't stand in front of you and face you like a man, so to speak. And what happened to those days? You know, the days when someone like Andrew Jackson had had enough. And, you know, you read about his exploits in dueling. This guy's a crack shot, so, you know, I'll wait till he fires and make sure that I get my shot off. I mean, that's something, I'll tell you. Where are those days? Now we have cowards hiding behind an increasingly litigious system of deception, and, you know, whoever has the biggest lawyer wins. It's ridiculous. But I digress. Getting back on track. Yeah, I wanted to play I wanted to play an excerpt from Jack Otto's talk. Some of the remarks that John Stadmiller made on Saturday. And even yesterday. And so you know, just to back up and finish the point that I was making in the last segment, as I was reading the statement, who made this statement in an interview back in May of 1998. It's important to support this network, because without it, there are so many things none of us would be aware of, I dare say, you know. And what I tried to say yesterday when I called into the National Intel Report was, I've learned so many things, many of them I don't think I ever would have learned or discovered anywhere else.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people write about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. My wife and I both use Extendivite and are very pleased with the results. It has helped to stabilize our blood pressure and to make both of us feel healthier. Good product and goodbye. So far, so good. I've been taking Extendivite 3 times a day, only a short while now, but already I've noticed the circulation in my hands and feet improving. They tingle. I like the idea of taking something herbal rather than pills. I take Extendivite 3 times a day every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation, and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going for speed. She's all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance.
So, back in 1967... April 4, 1967, Martin Luther King said, the recent statements of your executive committee are the sentiments of my own heart, and I found myself in full accord when I read its opening lines, a time comes when silence is betrayal. And that time has come for us in relation to Vietnam, and it has come for us today in so many other ways, so many other things. And, you know, Edmund Burke is attributed certain words. He actually did make the observation, there is a limit at which forbearance ceases to be virtue And in similar fashion to the crippling of the mind, body, and spirit, you know, you get from books like Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning that, you know, as Jordan Peterson has pointed out, Viktor Frankl says the best of us didn't make it out. And that means to me a couple of things. It means the best men, the most virtuous, didn't make it out because they weren't willing to do the things required to survive, basically. They weren't willing to be bent toward evil to survive. And many books have been written over the past several decades, in particular about how increasingly orchestrated everything around us is. Many other books have been written, several based on studies and investigation into tyrannical regimes. I've mentioned several of those even today. And how we're all susceptible to being conscripted to evil and the worst atrocities. And again, that's a point I think Jordan Peterson makes pretty well, saying, you know, how does this happen? How does this happen? Well, you, I, we are how it happens. We're all capable of these things. So, you know, again, to paraphrase Viktor Frankl, reflecting on his experience in the Nazi concentration camps from his book, Man's Search for Meaning, the best of us did not make it out. In other words, the best men among them did not survive because they were too noble of character, so to speak, to allow themselves to stoop to the evil means necessary to survive. And of those who did survive, the best in them didn't make it out because their evil deeds were required for their survival. Thus, the best in them was arguably left behind in the camps. It died in the camps, you might say. And so, in the same sort of sense, us being conscripted to evil is a sort of genocide of the virtuous, you might say. Among others, Alexander Solzhenitsyn expressed similar sentiments in his Gulag Archipelago. Perpetual war is a genocide of the warrior class of a society, the brave and courageous. And in a similar fashion, the aforementioned is a genocide of the virtuous. And, you know, I would say all the more reason to draw near to the Lord. Matthew 10:28, Luke 12:4, and James 4:7 come to mind in particular. So speaking of Edmund Burke and things that he did or did not say, last point, and then we'll go to the phones. That disputed quote, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. Well, maybe he is responsible for those remarks, maybe not. Either way, he did make this observation in Thoughts on the Cause of the Present Discontents, published in 1770. Burke did write, when bad men combine, the good must associate, else they will fall one by one, an unpitied sacrifice in a contemptible struggle. Because, you know, bad guys combine like a little bundle of sticks and fancy themselves unbreakable. Anyway, to the phones we go. Renee in North Carolina, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yeah, I was so glad that you are stressing how we need to keep our terms straight, like being Zionist and Jew, like Chuck Carlson, who would be on Weekly with Robbie Noel on this network, stresses that most Zionists are Christians. They're not Jews, okay? And the thing is, because history has been twisted for so long, a lot of these people... you need to understand something with the whole Palestinian question. Like, say, even the Jews are not the real, it's the Ashkenazi, not the Palestinians. You know, God could have picked anywhere in the world to find the mother to produce Jesus. He could have gone to Switzerland, Norway, or Finland. He didn't. He picked a brown Jewish woman. Okay, and then the thing is, they also don't want to admit the fact, and they want to, blame the Jews for the death of Jesus, when in fact, it was the occupying European Romans that were in, you know, occupying and, you know, going around the world, occupying other countries, that there was the Roman soldiers and the Roman government that went along with the torturing and murdering Jesus. So the thing, they try to flip the script, okay?
Well,
the thing is,
I think the operative concept there, the European occupying forces
were the ones who killed him.
I think the operative concept there is that everyone is culpable. His own people, so to speak, delivered him up. And Pilate kept trying to say, he actually said, I find no guilt in this man. I don't have any reason to hold him. Who do you want? Here is a guy who's innocent in my view, and here's a criminal. Which one do you want me to give you? And they shouted, give us Barabbas.
But the thing is, yeah, they're both complicit. But we know that church and state, the powers of church and state, have often been, you know, kind of complicit with each other in order to occupy, to exploit the people. So the thing is, there's some things, there's a lot of twisting going on. You know, people like to, you know, like success has many fathers and failures and orphan people love taking credit and personally or for their group, because then if you can make their group look good by association, then they're good and they get to feel real good about themselves. And the same thing about assigning blame and everything to other groups that are different. And usually the group that's suffering get the blame of those with the least power, and the ones who have the most power take all the credit. It's just like maybe like a boss, a bad boss at a business, and you do something really good, and he takes credit because he's above you, and he tells everybody he did it, and if something goes wrong and it was his fault, he goes, oh, no, look, it was you. It's the same thing, whether it's kind of like on a microcosm or a macrocosm kind of level. And this tendency is so ingrained.
It's a scapegoat, you know, sort of concept that's been weaponized again by the same intriguers,
yeah.
And it's like an essential part of the strategy to use scapegoating, which again is a biblical concept.
Well, and just like too, look, God put the Europeans in Europe, okay, but the thing is, whenever they would go outside of their country to explore, oh, they're great explorers and heroes, and look how great they are. And the thing is, but when other people leave their country and come to yours, oh, complete double standard. Oh, no, they're cockroaches; they're not any good, and everything else. The thing is, we've used a lot of excuses to go take the land, resources, and labor of other people, like the King Leopold. And it's not just him, because he had people to carry it out, where to harvest the rubber in Africa. He'd make those black people do it, and if they didn't brag and come back with enough, they'd cut a hand off. That's well documented. And if they didn't go to get their hand cut off, they had to go, because if not, he'd kill their whole family. So the thing is, there's a lot of people, I'm sure, wish the Europeans had stayed in Europe, okay? So the thing is, we have to be fair and honest about this, and there's a lot of people who lie. There's enough wrongdoing to go around here. A lot of people want to blame one group or the other. I call it the Trinity of Evil. Both the Roman Catholics, the Protestants, and Ashkenazi Jews probably are the ones who have held the power. They probably are the ones who have kind of perpetuated the most of this. I don't like to get caught up in which one of it is that's not in my group, because there's enough blame to go around for all three of those groups.
Yeah. Yep. Well said.
Well, that's just because, see, I think if we don't do this, when we get caught, the same thing, whether it's right-left paradigm or socialism and capitalism or black and white, when we get caught and everybody gets on the defensive and tries to, well, my group's better than your group, and the thing is, when that starts, you can't accomplish anything. You know, and like I said, I'm just so tired of all this killing and fighting and stuff. It's been going on for thousands of years, and the people of power lie about what they're doing, and they write history as great conquering heroes and demonize their victims. And the thing is, You know, and they're the last ones that want to face the truth because, you know, is it evil happens when people refuse to bear the pain of legitimate guilt. And they start going, well, I didn't do it. Now, I'm not saying you did it, but you at least have to be able to face the truth about the reality of what did happen. And I'm sorry, a lot of people are too weak and don't have the moral courage to do that.
Well, that's true, but again, I think, you know, there's a nuance in there somewhere. Evil happens when people are unwilling to face the burden of legitimate guilt, I think is how you said that. And the problem, I think there's a nuance in there somewhere. I didn't do certain things. You didn't do certain things. But if we don't recall those things, we're in danger of repeating the same bad examples and lessons. And
I agree.
So, you know, I think there's a nuance in there, but
it feels uncomfortable. They can't.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, again, I mean, the conversations that people have around this time of year, the deeply inculcated Stockholm syndrome is it's so pervasive, and when we're not willing to face the troubling realities, I agree. That's when evil just sort of masquerades in plain sight, so to speak.
Yeah, because let's face it, we all like to feel good about ourselves, but the thing is, a lot of the ugliness, what happens, like when something like that happens, when people don't want to suffer the pain of legitimate guilt, psychiatrist Scott Peck, what happens is, well, they start blaming their victim, rationalizing, making the excuses. I was just doing my job, blah, 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 blah. And that's why I find it quite admirable recently when you, like I say, you admit, you and John called in and admitted too. It's like, gee, we made a real boo-boo when we joined the military, okay? But the thing is, we don't just need two or three or four or five men doing that. We need a lot of them. Just like these people go, oh, well, most of the cops are good. That's not possible. You can't have everything in government as corrupt as it is with most of them being good. It's mathematically impossible.
And again, you're the person who's pointed to
going along or something.
Yeah, you're the one who's pointed to books like Philip Zimbardo's Lucifer Effect along the way, and the fact that, I mean, I know people, and I know people this has happened to. I know people that have had conversations with folks in law enforcement, for example, that don't have any prior military service. Same thing happens to them because of the training. I've talked about the backup training LLC that 10 years ago bragged itself as the world leader in CD-ROM-based law enforcement training, which was acquired by Blackwater, and that basically that pumps the Blackwater, so to speak, into the veins of every post academy around the country. And so because of that, all of the law enforcement, all of the post academies are teaching the militarization of law enforcement, and they're getting this private, it's not even military, it's the hybrid of private military contractor sort of Prussian army type stuff. It's the Praetorian Guard being normalized in every hamlet across the country, and people that I have talked to personally know loved ones who say, this person changed. They had no prior military service, and they changed. And I'm not particularly pleased. I'm kind of deeply saddened in a way by how they changed. So it's happening. It's real.
Yes, and it turns men into, I've observed it. I'm sorry. It does change them. And I think often their wives and children suffer into what it changes them into. And then going to war, and what they see and do and what's indoctrinated into their heads. I've said this before, how my father, from him serving, you had to be damn careful. And I've heard other people say the same thing. When you woke him up, it does something. This leaves damage that affects our entire culture and society. It doesn't make men out of them. You know, the thing is, it might work really good for some of them, but it works really badly for others. And so the thing is, because you had to be careful when you woke him up, because if not, you're going to get a fist in the teeth You know, so yeah. The thing is, I don't think people realize the impact on our culture, this kind of constant war and militarization of our culture and what it does. And I'm sure you could speak to that because you've been inside and you maybe saw how it affected yourself. You know, you could probably speak to that way better than I could. You know, yeah. You might have changes. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, God, I didn't realize. You know, look how this affected me.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Definitely. Yep. Yep. We're coming up to the end here.
Okay, let me let someone else get in, okay?
Thanks, Renee. I appreciate it. I appreciate your call and your sentiments, as always. Yeah, well said. Two things, real quick. A couple of articles that come to mind. I mentioned yesterday's, Jeffrey Rosen recently published an article over at The Atlantic titled "America is Living James Madison's Nightmare. The founders designed a government that would resist mob rule. They didn't anticipate how strong the mob could become." I would kind of, or how fomented the mob could become, you know, with the modern tools, so to speak. That's one that I think everybody should read. And a companion to it, which was sent to me, was the Activist Post article, "What I Don't Like About Life in Post 9/11 America." I think those two should be read together, perhaps in that order. And before we conclude the broadcast, the person who made the remarks in May of 1998 that I read earlier was Osama bin Laden, which I think is, you know, would come as quite a shock to most people. Back to the phones, Larkin, Texas. Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hi, Chris. Just a side note. Just a side note here regarding the 13th Tribe and Arthur Koestler. You know, John Stadtmiller had as a guest on his National Intel Report a few years ago a man who has a website, and the website is perennialteachings.blogspot.com. I've posted it in your chat room today. And in the final few minutes of that broadcast, a caller called in and made mention of Arthur Koestler's theory, quote-unquote, regarding the Khazars and his book in the 13th Tribe. And he might have even mentioned whether or not the Koestlers were assassinated or murdered or what have you. But I think it would be instructive to see if John would want to invite this man back. He's not been active on his blog since about 2014, but he disputed it, said there was other evidence. And ever since, I've wondered about him, because at the time I was listening to this man speak, I knew he was advocating for communitarianism.
Uh-huh.
And I know that John had him on the broadcast because he was a gold bug at the time. But I didn't know where he found this guest. I didn't understand why he was brought on. But it was a one-time occasion. He never came back. And that still is hanging. He was never challenged on that assertion that other evidence was available to disprove Arthur Koestler's theory 100%, and hence Jack Otto's.
It's really interesting, you know, speaking of that, if you go to, I think one of the interesting little entries in that discussion is the Khazars Wikipedia entry, and there are several sections folks can look at. It's interesting to look at. I would encourage folks to look at it, but specifically, Section 5, Claims of Khazar Ancestry, and then 5.1, Ashkenazi Khazar Theories. I was reading that again yesterday, and it's interesting. You have a litany of folks from the early to mid to late 1800s espousing this view, and it gets kind of fleshed out over time, over the course of the 19th and 20th centuries, the early 20th century, on up into the entry where, you know, it says the Khazar Ashkenazi hypothesis came to the attention. And look at the names of some of these folks, you know, Abraham Eliyahu Harkavi, Anatoly Leroy Bilyeu, Ernst Renan, Abraham Pollock, Salo Whitmer Baron, Leon Polyakov. These are, you know, Samuel Krauss, Maurice Fishberg. These are some, you know, interesting names in the discussion. Bernard Lewis. These are folks who all agree. And then we come to, you know, the Khazar-Ashkenazi hypothesis came to the attention of much wider public with the publication of Arthur Koestler's 13th Tribe in 1976, which was both positively reviewed and dismissed as a fantasy. So it's interesting. The section opens with the notion that, you know, most credible scholars and historians all kind of agree that this theory has been dismissed. And then there are a number of names who are mentioned who not just supported the theory, but continued the work of fleshing this theory out. And so it's interesting the kind of paradoxical view that's made there. It's like everything else. It's like the headlines these days. The headline says one thing, but you read the story, and the story says something entirely different. You know what I mean?
Yes. And I think really it kind of goes to something that I talked about with Deanna a couple weeks ago. And it goes to something called core values, which is written by a couple of Israeli psychiatrists or psychologists, one or the other. The subtitle is Incitement and Hate Language, Hate Education and Their Role in Promotion of Violent Conflict and Atrocity Crimes, an Epidemiologic Perspective. And this was sponsored by the Jerusalem Center for Genocide Prevention, JC4GP.org. And two obviously Jewish gentlemen. But it's interesting how they're weaving this this thing called core values and incitement to commit genocide and hate speech in a way that I believe is part of an ongoing effort to enact hate speech legislation in this country, similar to what they have in Europe and in Canada. And I think this is quite dangerous, but there are three quotes at the very, very beginning of this paper. And the quotes are not, they speak to how conquest is actually, how it actually happens. It happens not necessarily through the acquisition of territory by force. It happens through the appropriation of the language. So it is the language and the narratives woven from that language that is actually the singular driving force which causes people to be subjugated and or conquered.
Which is why, yeah, absolutely, which is why I've been pointing folks to Arnold J. Toynbee's work for, you know, particularly this year. That's interesting. It's also interesting they quote Arthur Koestler in their paper.
Yep. It is.
So, like John Stadmiller said on Saturday, these are the people that are crying tolerance and we need to stop the genocide when they themselves are the least tolerant, the most hateful, the most bigoted, and the most genocidal, of course.
Yeah, take a look at psychological reversal or inversion as well as pathological altruism, and you'll understand why altruism is one of the isms.
Yeah.
That I include in my all-encompassing but yet concise list of what comprises communitarianism.
Right on. Thanks, Lark.
Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective, and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not
not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.